Welcome to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on eurofolkradio.com. Joining me today is the writer Victor Thorne. Victor has written many fantastic books. He's also a regular contributor to American Free Press, and I'm going to bring Victor on right now. Victor, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Andrew. Thanks for having me on. It's much appreciated on this end.
Well, it's great to have you on. I really appreciate you giving your time to me and my listeners. Basically, as it's the first show together, and you'd be welcome to come back again, you've written so much. I mean, I've written a couple of books, but you've written many, many, many books. And so I wanted to hand over to you for kind of your background and anything that you want to focus on. And in the meantime, I'm going to bring your website up, and so maybe I might ask you about certain books. But you just go through your background and any of your work that you want to introduce people to, and also your details as to where people can get hold of your work.
Oh, super. Well, my website can be found at www.wingtv.com. .net. I also am a weekly contributor to American Free Press, which is americanfreepress.net. And basically a quick outline of my background is I started something called Babel Magazine in 2001, began my own radio show, the first of many different radio shows, in 2002. Began Wing TV in 2004, which back in those days we did one of the first online television shows ever, and also began Sisyphus Press in 2001, which is not only a publication house but also a distributorship for different books. So if anyone goes to Wing TV, they can find not only my books but also many books, many of them hard to find books by some of the authors that have had the biggest impact on me over the last 10 or 15 years. And I think right now, with including the latest book published by American Free Press, which is called Crowning Clinton, Why Hillary Shouldn't Be Allowed in the White House, I think it's my 57th published book. And as I said, these cover all different subjects. Really, I get bored easily, so once I finish one book, I oftentimes go off in a completely different direction. So it really covers a lot of ground, a lot of different subjects, and it's all at wingtv.net.
Excellent, and you've done quite a lot of books on the Clintons, and tell us some of their backgrounds. Obviously, I think a lot of people are familiar with the drug situation through MENA, Arkansas, and the, you know, the suiciding of various people. Is there an overview you can give us there?
Well, Michael Collins Piper, who regrettably passed away last year, and who was a longtime writer for American Free Press, when the Hillary trilogy was published by American Free Press, and they were in three different volumes, the sex volume, the drugs volume, and the murder volume, Michael Collins Piper, who was one of the most well-read people I've ever met, he said that by far these were the three best books ever written about the Clintons ever in print. And I took that as a real high compliment, especially coming from Mike. And they really, you can look at all of the different books written about the Clintons or watch any of the television shows, read newspaper articles. And what they'll mostly do is walk on eggshells, dance around the edges, hint at certain scandals. Well, in this Hillary trilogy, there is no hinting at anything. This is full right on. It's a full barrage of all of the scandals that the Clintons have been engaged in for the last 30 or 40 years. And so on the heels of the Hillary trilogy, then within the last 3 or 4 weeks, the new Hillary book came out, which is also available at American Free Press. What this did was take it from the 2008 election up until now. So all of Hillary's most recent scandals, which weren't included in the trilogy, are now in this book here, and we're really proud of how well it's doing at American Free Press. And anybody that's paying attention to American politics knows that it looks like Hillary is the shoo-in right now, unless, of course, the FBI indicts her and she ends up behind bars. But it's imperative that the Clintons are not allowed back into the White House, that this catastrophe can't happen. So we're doing everything on our part at American Free Press to try to prevent Hillary from winning this next election.
Yes, I agree. I think, I mean, It just amazes me how she can even be in the running. It really does amaze me. And it used to be years ago, I remember, you know, people would run for a nomination. If they didn't get it, you'd never hear from them again. You know, someone like Gary Hart, for example, do you remember when he ran for the Democrat? And he was, you know, why didn't he run next time as well for nomination? Well, it was almost like back then, if you didn't get the nomination, then you didn't run again. But these days, they're running every time, you know. Romney ran and didn't get the nomination. Then he ran the next time and got the nomination. And Clinton ran last time, didn't get it. And this time she's running again. But in your opinion, I mean, it's looking increasingly like it's going to be a Trump versus Clinton, you know, battle, if you like. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's going to be Trump versus Clinton? And if that is the case, do you think that, you know, regardless of what you and AFP are doing, which is, you know, admirable, and I mean, just look, there's too much of Clinton even on the surface. I mean, you'd have to do several shows, which is why you've written several books. But my point being is that, do you think it's going to be Trump versus Clinton? And if so, do you think that it's a shoo-in for Clinton because even if she doesn't get the votes, then they'll rig the machines?
Well, that those are all very good points. Right now, if we took a snapshot, it would be Trump versus Clinton this fall. Obviously, a lot of things can change since then, and the Republican GOP neocon machine is there's a bloodbath going on behind the scenes and even in front of the scenes to try to get Trump out of there because he's throwing such a monkey wrench into their works. But if we just look at Trump versus Clinton, what I've been explaining to people for, you know, a few months now is that when I look at a presidential election now, I don't look at each candidate as a person or a set of policies. What I look at them as is a symbol. What do these people symbolize? And Donald Trump right now symbolizes strength in comparison to the overt weakness that's been exhibited by Barack Obama for the past 8 years. So what we always see in politics is a pendulum swinging back and forth. And Obama is so pusillanimous, so effeminate, so such weakness there, that the American public finally, after 8 years of this, has said, we're tired of it. We're tired of losing with Obama. He's no drama Obama. There's no enthusiasm. There's no charisma there. He's like a candle that's burned out. And he simply is a symbol of feminine weakness. Okay? So Trump now is the direct opposite of that, that he comes out oozing with charisma, strength. America's going to win again. Take America back. So I think that really explains his appeal, that after being reduced, and I really think that's what has happened to America, is we've been reduced by Obama, that now the pendulum's going back and Trump represents strength. Now, what does Hillary, what is she a symbol of? Well, Hillary is a symbol of old, fading, dying feminism. And even though she keeps playing the gender card over and over and over again, even younger women, the millennials, look at Hillary as something from the past. What they look at feminism as is something different than what Hillary represents. So that explains why a lot of young voters really aren't going for Hillary, because she represents an outdated notion of feminism where, you know, men are the cause of all the world's problems and burn our bras and we have to take down men. And women today, the younger women today, simply don't look at it that way. So Hillary has a lot of problems facing her, not only with the scandals and with her husband Bill's long history of rape and sexual abuse and being a sexual predator, that if I had to predict today, and this only is for today, that if Trump went up against Hillary, I think he would trounce her in the election. And, you know, especially because all of these other candidates still play by the old playbook of the way politics was played for the last 200 years. Trump is a completely different variable who doesn't play by this playbook. He's thrown it out the window. So even behind the scenes, a lot of the Clinton people are saying, we don't know what the hell we're getting into with this guy. And if you recall, just about a month ago or so, Andrew, when Hillary tried to play the gender card and started calling Trump a sexist, well, immediately, in the snap of a finger, Donald Trump brings up, well, look at the women that your husband has raped. Look at how you enabled your husband. Look at how you attack these women that your husband sexually assaulted. And boom, just as quickly, that whole storyline went out the window because Hillary's like, we can't go there because my husband is a sexual predator. And as opposed to the other guys who will give her a pass, Donald Trump won't. He plays by different rules. He's a street fighter. And so I think Hillary is genuinely concerned that if she has to go up against Trump this fall, it is going to be completely different than anything they've ever faced before.
Yeah, and also, I mean, there's just so many scandals surrounding her. I mean, I can't believe that the, you know, mainstream American public aren't aware yet that she is, in fact, a lesbian, and if that has any problems with them.
Well, the thing is that a lot of them, Andrew, are. A lot of them are. Like, you know, I've actually interviewed women from different feminist organizations, like the National Organization for Women and others, got them on the phone, point this out to them. They're well aware of it. Yeah, I mean, obviously they're aware of it. They simply don't care. They can overlook that Hillary has been the most destructive force in the last 50 years to women than any other single political figure that there is. They simply don't care because they want to win. And what that means is that Hillary says, I'm never going to outlaw abortion. I'll even keep partial birth abortion, where a nine-month-old baby in the womb, where they'll pull the whole body out and leave the head inside the womb and then stab it with forceps to kill it, that women, these arch-militant feminists, they'll do anything humanly possible to make sure that not one iota of abortion is ever outlawed. So they'll overlook everything else. When it comes to a lot of women, other women that aren't quite that involved, they're doing the same idea that a lot of liberals and blacks did 8 years ago, where it's like, oh, the first black president, this is going to be a historic event. Well, how well has that worked out for America, the first black president? It's been a catastrophe. That's how it's worked out. So if we're basing everything on identity politics, the first black president, the first woman president, well, if Obama has been a disaster for 8 years, which he has been, and Hillary says she's simply going to be an extension, a third term of Obama, well, how well does anybody think that's going to work out? It's going to be business as usual, and business as usual with Obama has been disastrous. So, again, this country has to do everything humanly possible to make sure Hillary doesn't get in the White House, because God help us all if she does.
Well, I agree. I think that the issue for me is the, you know, the fact that, not that she is a lesbian, but the fact that everyone knows that she is, but she pretends that she's happily married to Bill. I mean, you know, this is my issue. Why always lie about it? And when you said about, I think a lot of women, Republican women, would vote for Clinton because she's a woman, in the same way you say with blacks voting for Obama, and in the same way that O.J. Simpson got off with a black jury because, oh, we'll let him get away with murder because he's black. I mean, it's pathetic. It is absolutely pathetic that people, you see, to my mind, I'm white, and it doesn't mean that I like every white person, and I'm a man, it doesn't mean that I like every man or every white man. There's some, you know, despicable people out there. But it's how these women and blacks and what have you seem to be able to stick together on something like a voting position. It just seems just retarded in its perceptive outlook.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point a minute or so ago that Hillary is a lesbian. And there's so much of a preponderance of evidence that she is that I don't even think it's debatable anymore. So, you know, we're in this new modern era of tolerance and acceptance, okay? You know, gay marriage is now permitted by law, and everybody that's out of the closet wants to be out of the closet and blah, blah, blah. Well, if this is the case, and everybody's, you know, supposed to have all this gay pride now and all this malarkey, well, where's Hillary? If Hillary is a lesbian and she's so proud of it and she's so supportive of lesbians and homosexuals, why doesn't she come out of the closet, hold a press conference and say, all right, for the last 40 years, my marriage to Bill has been a complete and utter sham, a complete ruse. We're not in love with each other. This is more than likely a prearranged marriage. And Bill is off gallivanting. He's had thousands and thousands of extramarital affairs, and I'm a lesbian. If Hillary is so proud of it and proud of this lifestyle that she claims to support, why not put her money where her mouth is and come right out and say, all right, I'm going to come clean with everybody. Hillary Clinton is a lesbian. Why can't she do that, Andrew?
Well, this is exactly it. You see, they keep pushing all this down our throats and saying, look, this is all normal now, it's all acceptable, and we've legislated for it. But the people in power that are of that persuasion aren't prepared to admit it because they know it'll cost them votes. So in other words, they realise that people don't accept all this political correctness. But, I mean, I remember going back to the George Bush presidency, George W. Bush, there was those rumours about him with Jeff Gannon, with homosexual relationships there in the White House. And then, of course, you follow it through to Obama today. And the fact that, what are your views on whether George W. Bush was homosexual? And then going forward to Obama, his wife being a man and his reference to her as Michael, and then Joan Rivers coming out and saying everyone knows that he's a tranny, etc., etc. Do you believe that both those accusations were true?
Well, we'll start with George Bush. I've heard, obviously, all of the same murmurs that you have. And I would say that I don't have enough evidence yet or haven't yep. seen enough to prove that George W. Bush was a homosexual. Now, with his father and all of the shenanigans going on in the White House with the young male escorts, that has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. So, yeah, there is smoke there. When it comes to Barack Obama, I've interviewed a man named Larry Sinclair who yeah. also wrote a book. Larry Sinclair has told me and anybody else that will listen, he had a press conference at the National Press Club, and he says that on two different occasions back in the late 1990s, he not only smoked crack with Barack Obama, but also engaged with homosexual sex with him. Everybody that I know that has spoken with Larry Sinclair or interviewed him says that he comes across as very genuine, very believable. And if I have his book, he sent me a copy of his book. I read it, and it is so detailed. He has receipts. He has specific times and dates and so forth. So, again, Barack Obama, the biggest champion of homosexuality of any political figure ever. Newsweek magazine a couple years ago put him on their cover with the big rainbow over his head, and they said America's first gay president. Of course, there's all of these rumors about Michelle Obama actually being a man, being a transvestite. Anyone that goes to Google and enters those words will come up with tons and tons of videos and articles and actually even diagrams and descriptions and pointing out this and that. I think it's very much a subject that should be further researched and investigated. And all I can say is that, well, I think you said it best, Andrew, is that they want to shove all of this political correctness down our throats. Yet when it comes to their own lifestyles, then they go and hide behind the closet and, refuse to come out because they know that not only will they be ridiculed, but in future elections, this would cost them a lot of votes, namely because they've been living a lie for how many decades now. So all of this material should be investigated. And, you know, I don't shy away from it. When I wrote my book on Obama called Frontman, there's information in there about Larry Sinclair. So it's the real problem we have is that we have a lapdog media. In other words, the media in our country and for the most part worldwide won't go after the meat of these issues. They'll dance around the edges and hint at things or, on the other hand, completely ignore it and don't give any clues to it. So it's everybody out there should be thankful that we have radio shows like yours and others that have people like me on that we can discuss like adults these subjects instead of burying them in the backyard like a dog does to a bone. We need to start being adults about these subjects and address them rather than ignoring them.
Absolutely. And I mean, when you said about the rainbow thing on Newsweek, I mean, he also lit up the White House with a rainbow flag lights. And so many people, they originally thought that this was just a meme someone had made as a joke on the internet, but it was actually the way they lit it up. It was just amazing. You know, fighting for a certain legislation and then decorating the White House with it. It was astonishing to me. And the other thing is I think that all these people, you know, the Jewish power behind the scenes, I believe that they get a great big belly laugh out the fact that the Republicans and Democrats, they can get them voting for people that are just absolute trash. They're absolute garbage. And they actually put out there what garbage these people are, but the mainstream media just don't report it, but it is out there. And people still vote for them. And I think that this is part of their Talmudic concept, that if they can put such garbage out there and make the Goyim vote for them, it's almost extra power and extra fun they get toying with us, the same way as a cat toys with a mouse.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful point. And, you know, a good friend of mine, P. Papa Heracles, who I believe you interviewed recently, we speak a lot about a concept called the revelation of the method. And this is developed over the, you know, by various people, and it keeps evolving. But essentially what the revelation of the method means is that those in power become so arrogant and so confident that nobody can stop what they're doing, that they literally put everything, it reaches a point where there's no longer a conspiracy. Everything is out in the open. And they say, okay, what are you going to do about it now? So a lot of this stuff, as you said, is really being pushed in our faces. And, you know, Barack Obama lighting up the White House with the gay rainbow colors. This is revelation of the method. He's telling the world that he's a homosexual. And he says, what are you going to do to stop it? And you're right, Andrew, behind the scenes, they are getting a huge belly laugh out of this because they say, well, how can they stop us? Well, the only way that we can stop them is through shows like yours, through publications like American Free Press that expose this. And, you know, there's so many people that are contributing money to Hillary Clinton or to Ted Cruz or Jeb Bush. And what we have to do is we have to come together and pool our resources. And we have to say, you know, they're all a cohesive unit. We have to become so also and become a force that they have to reckon with, because right now we're so fractured in so many different directions that there is no cohesion among us. And it would be, I don't think anybody in our movement can really comprehend how strong all of us would be if we did the same thing that the Jewish power structure or the Democratic Party or the Republican Party or any of them do, that we would be a real force to be reckoned with. And as we move into the future, I think that's really a notion that all of us should think a lot about and say, you know, they need to deal with the truth rather than continually getting away with their lies.
Well, funny enough, I was talking to Pete yesterday And he was on my show yesterday. He's a great guy. So you follow him the following day. It was Dave Gahari, our mutual friend from American Free.
You saved the best for last, Andrew.
Yeah, excellent. Well, actually, you've got his. You've got Dave's Friday, because Dave and I do a show every other Friday when American Free Press comes out. So, yeah, it's. For the benefit of the listeners, they know that I pre-record these shows, and this is being pre-recorded on the 4th of March. So, anyway, yeah, it's especially as this Jewish angle is, I mean, it amazes me that people don't see it, that the mainstream really don't see it. It is getting out there, but I just want to jump over now to, I'm looking at your book, Conspiriality, and this is something that looks really good. And there's some great, you know, you've got TWA Flight 800, Pat Tillman, the Lusitania attack, Poppy Bush and his, and the Nightmare on Elm Street, then going through Patty Hearst. And the thing that I wanted to jump onto was the Stanley Kubrick and the Moon hoax, because this is something that really interested me. I've always been one of my favourite films, I don't know why, but was The Shining. I thought the way it was filmed was just the acting and everything. It something about it, and I completely, when I saw a film called The Shining Code, and I don't know if you've seen that, but it gives you all these links to that film. Mm-hmm. And if there was like one or two, and there's some, you know, very tenuous links where they're counting cars and they put it up to this is one number, and then this next bit is another number, and they're on the same line and they're splitting it to suit them. But there's so many, you know, the links that they come out with must be over 100, and they can't all be coincidental. And it's his way of sort of saying that even the room, they changed the number of the room to 237 because that's the 1,000 miles from the moon and what have you. But yeah, I'll hand over to you. You've obviously got your chapter, Stanley Kubrick and the Moon Hoax. So what's your details you've got for us on that?
Yeah, well, this is, boy, we could devote an entire show to this subject alone. Stanley Kubrick, ever since the 70s, has fascinated me. And even before I knew the real conspiracies surrounding him, his movies were, you know, Doctor Strangelove and Full Metal Jacket and Clockwork Orange and Lolita and on and on and on. They were remarkable movies. Well, once I started delving in then to conspiracy theories, Stanley Kubrick's name kept popping up, you know, Eyes Wide Shut and so forth. And following all of these different kernels, you know, going down different rabbit holes, I finally came to The Shining, as you mentioned, and the Moon Hoax. And once you know what you're looking for in this movie, I think it's evident that Stanley Kubrick was saying, look, I had a part in this Moon Hoax. And all of the different clues that he drops that if you watch the movie without this information, you're saying, what the hell does that mean? Why is that there? Why did they change things in Stephen King's books when they didn't need to be changed? Well, if you don't know this background information, you scratch your head and it's all a big puzzle. But once the pieces are fit together, then you say, Stanley Kubrick was a genius in that he couldn't come right out and say, I was a part of this vast hoax. So what he did was subtly, almost subliminally, embed these codes into the movie The Shining. And it is fascinating beyond words, because once, as you said, you know, hundreds of these clues are linked together, you see a completely different film and a completely different picture than one that was before. I have a good buddy that teaches college. And he teaches a film course, and one of the movies he always shows is The Shining. And I sent him the book, Conspiriality, which is available on wingtv.net. And he read that chapter, and he says, you know what, I must have seen this movie two or three dozen times, and I had no idea what was going on in it until now. And so this is, you know, I think the whole book is remarkable with the chapter on John Kennedy Jr., his assassination, who was Barack Obama's real parents, and on and on and on, that this is really juicy conspiracy material here. And I'm glad that you picked out the Kubrick material, because I write about him in other books also, and he's someone that's fascinated me for years and still does to this day.
Yeah, and your book as well, which is one that I've got a copy of, and it was also featured in the Poker Face album, and that's 9/11 Evil, which was, for me, the best book on 9/11 that I ever read. And what I like about your work is you keep things tight, and you know, when I put the Synagogue of Satan together, it was my own document, it was my own compendium, if you like, of the conspirators and their actions and what really happened. And so for Kennedy, I took what Michael Collins Piper said with David Ben-Gurion him telling David Ben-Gurion that he wouldn't allow Israel to have the nuclear bomb, and then that's why he was killed, etc. And so many different things. So I'll have the USS Liberty in there, but I'm only taking a couple of paragraphs, maybe a page, on each of these different things and linking them all together. And so when all this hits you all at once and you can see all these same people being involved, and the way that you write as well is that you keep it tight and you tell us all the important stuff. And certainly 9/11 Evil was, it had everything in there that I needed. Is there any other information? I mean, when it comes to 9/11 now, I've never really been so interested on whether there was planes, whether there was no planes, etc. What I care about is who was behind it. And I know it was Israel and this Jewish elite behind it. And how they did it, I think, will come out in time. But have you got any other things to, you know, your general synopsis of 9/11?
Oh, yeah. Well, interestingly, that 9/11 Evil came out on the 5th anniversary of 9/11, and then I did a follow-up called 9/11 Made in Israel, which came out on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And
right.
What this book did was update all of the material from 9/11 Evil that had occurred in the last 5 years. And you're absolutely right that Israel played a huge, huge, huge role in 9/11, something that, again, the mainstream media won't even hint at. And these books here, I mean, I wrote my first 9/11 article in November of 2001. So 2 months after 9/11 occurred, I was already at work piecing it all together. And obviously, in November 2011, I didn't know everything that would be in 9/11 Evil or 9/11 Made in Israel, but on the day 9/11 happened, I was watching it on television, and only about 4 to 6 weeks earlier, my son and I had been inside the World Trade Center towers, because we used to go to New York City all the time, and there was this great bookstore in one of the towers, a Borders bookstore. So every time we went to New York City, we always went to this Border bookstore inside the towers. And this structure is vast. I mean, people can't comprehend how huge it was unless they've actually been inside it or on the ground looking up at it. So when I was watching 9/11 on television that day, and all of a sudden these two towers collapse, and I said, no way. There is no possible way that this could be happening the way they're saying it, from jet fuel, because these structures are enormous. So the very first day, I knew, wait a second, this is utterly a false flag attack. So from that day, I started researching, and I think to this day I have 7 or 8 different books published on 9/11. One of the latest I co-authored with Pete Papaheracles, called Occult 9/11, which not only still looks at the Jewish conspiracy, but then also the occult conspiracy with numerology and symbolism and on and on. And what this book does is really take a completely different look or perspective at 9/11 than from the previous books that I'd written. And one last thing, Andrew, is you mentioned Synagogue of Satan, your book, and I remember distinctly when I first read that book years ago and, you know, learned about it through Tex Mars, and you know, I believe that's one of the books I carry on Wing TV, and it's a phenomenal book, and one that, you know, I'm sure all your listeners are aware of it, but if they haven't purchased it, that's one hell of a book.
Yeah, thank you, Victor. I mean, what it was just simply, I was listening to so many different shows with so many different guests in the all around 9/11 and before 9/11. You know, I kind of got into this in the late 90s. And funnily enough, one of the things that got me into this, you've got a guy called John Ronson with his book, The Men Who Stare at Goats, on your site.
Uh-huh.
Now, that was a television, obviously it became a film with Ewan McGregor and you know the one I mean, who was in The Big Lebowski and won the...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why my
mind's... Yeah, I know who you mean. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Not Kurt Russell, but...
like him.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I know who you mean.
We're both struggling for this name. We'll kick ourselves afterwards. It's one of those
Jeff
things...
Bridges.
That's
Bridges.
Him. That's it. That's it. Thank you. Yeah, and essentially, I don't know if you ever saw, there was a television series that preceded that in the UK that John Ronson made, and what he actually did was he did a television series before that, and I think that was in 98, I believe, and it was called The Secret Rulers of the World, and you can probably find it on, it was never made available on DVD, but I'm sure I've seen BitTorrents lying around that people have uploaded, and it was about 5 episodes, and he essentially went over to America, and he's a Jewish guy, and he went over and he was talking to people like... he actually met Randy Weaver. Went over to one episode was with David Icke. I think he interviewed Tex Mars in other episodes. He went over to speak to Dennis Mahan to do with the Elohim City or whatever, you know, where the Timothy McVeigh was supposed to have been for all that. So he tried to cover a lot of things. And one episode, he actually was with Jim Tucker at this Bilderberg meeting. And he was there filming with him. So he got in with a lot of people. And he even got an interview with Andreas Strassmeyer in Germany.
Interesting.
Yeah. And my point being is that that kind of got me into this stuff. And it was, at that point, we've only really got 4 main television channels in the UK. And then now pretty much everyone's bought cable. But your 3 channels are your 4 channels. And this was on one of those channels. And I was watching that, and I'd always been interested in stuff like that, and it was that kind of got me into the conspiracy side of things, and then listening to different shows and finally buying your own computer and getting on the internet and different things like that. And it was just hearing show after show. I mean, I started with Alex Jones and David Icke, and, you know, I dropped them like a hot brick not long afterwards, as most people do. Yeah. But, I mean, and you did a great show, actually, about Alex Jones. We can maybe touch on, well, let's touch on that now. I think you did a show with Dave about him, and there's some recent events with him. He was asking for this money bomb, and hasn't he just got divorced or something, and he's having to pay his wife a certain amount of money each month?
Right. Yeah, I believe that's on YouTube. And, Dave Gaharry and myself did a great expose on Alex Jones. And, you know, actually, I didn't start conspiracy research with Alex Jones like a lot of people. I started in, I believe, February of 1990 when I was living in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And one of my good buddies gave me a William Cooper VHS tape.
Oh, okay.
And I watched that, and I was hooked. And then, you know, I read Gary Allen's None Dare Call It Conspiracy, and then just devoured conspiracy books and videos. So, you know, I was already 10 years in to this before I ever even heard the name Alex Jones. And I, you know, listened to one or two shows of his, and I was like, are you serious? Like, this buffoon, this is what everybody thinks is the next big thing. And I just thought he was a joke, and I still do to this day. And it's, you know, you talk about getting a good belly laugh. Alex Jones has to be laughing every day of his life that there's still so many suckers that are buying into this nonsense that he peddles, this fear-mongering and rah, 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 you know, like a rabid dog. And it, to me, he's like a clown. He's a clown. And but, you know, you're talking about English television, and there was a great series that I got on DVD. It was called The Prisoner. Do you remember that show?
Patrick McGowan.
One of the greatest, I thought, one of the greatest television series ever made, ever. It was phenomenal, and I think it only went for one season.
Yeah.
But fascinating, fascinating show, and yeah, I loved it. And the other guy was Adam Curtis, who did the Century of the Self. You remember that show, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm vaguely familiar with that. Not as much as The Prisoner, but yeah.
Yeah, this is more of a documentary, and he also did The Power of Nightmares. And also, back in the 90s, I got the book of it, but it was called, what was it, they went to Mars, and it was what was the name of that? They did this hoax television show on April Fool's Day, and were making it appear as if astronauts had gone to Mars, and then afterwards they, you know, let it be known that this it was all a hoax. But another, you know, England was doing a lot of great stuff back in them days, and so yeah, I just was wondering if you saw any of those old shows.
Yeah, I mean, The Prisoner I'm familiar with. I think something like moving forward to The X-Files, for example. Now, that was something mm-hmm. that I think certain episodes really got close, and I'm surprised that they brought things out. But, of course, in the end, they have to turn it round to Aliens, which, you know, is very similar to the David Icke and even Alex Jones to a certain extent. I mean, Alex Jones, for me, if you remember someone like Hal Turner as well, Hal Turner became FBI informer, etc., and then ended up doing 3 years inside for inciting, some sort of, which I thought was trumped up charges anyway. But of course, I don't have a lot of sympathy for the guy because, you know, there were people on his show. I actually spoke to a guy called Artie Wheeler who used to call into his show, and his wife was there, and he got raided, and there was all these rumours that Hal Turner had tipped them off, and now that may or may not be true. And it's all sorts of different horrible things when he was supposed to be being loyal to people. But the point was with him is that he had a great delivery and engaging delivery. You know, it's what they call them. They call them shock jocks, you know.
And
a lot of people, they're not so interested in the information they're hearing. They're interested in the way it's delivered. And this is how people like Hal Turner and Alex Jones, it's all about their delivery that seems to hook people. And then if they just give people a little bit of information and, rile them up against the government without saying who's really behind it. Because, of course, David Icke will tell you a lot of the stuff that I tell you and a lot of stuff that you've written about. But then is 10% at the end, or maybe a bit more than that, but he'll divert off to, it's reptilians and it's this, that and the other. And so if you get the information, but in the end you're directed to the wrong culprit, then you're never going to win this battle because you're fighting someone that doesn't exist, or you're not fighting your true enemy. And it's the same with all these people. And when you actually look into it the way that you and I have, it's very easy to find out who the enemy is. But it's only then that you realise that the whole mainstream is your enemy as well, because there's not anything that kind of gives any leeway whatsoever. And when I talk about things like the X-Files, I say it's, you know, surprising some of the information they let out there. It's almost, I think I heard on a show recently, someone was saying that there's a Masonic practice, and it's that so long as you put out there what you're going to do, then you can get away with it. And it's a belief that they have. So long as they can say something like on 9/11 when Silverstein said that, you know, due to the loss of life, we made the decision to pull Building 7. Well, you don't just pull a building. You have to, especially a building of any size, but certainly one of that size, is going to take months and months to wire it up with explosives on the relevant pillars in order to flick a switch to pull it. And so that anyone could look up. All they needed to do was hear what he said and a 7-year-old child could go onto Google and just type in how does a building get pulled down by controlled demolition, and it will tell you, and it'll tell you how long it takes and what have you. So they've told you something obvious that the mainstream media broadcast as well, but no one questions. And I think that these things that are done in plain sight are part of their modus operandi, in the same way that, you know, Tex Mars did his book Codex Magica. And there was all those different hand signs that all these people are doing. And it takes us back to all the references in The Shining. Now, they can't all be coincidental. There's so much of this going on. And it's almost like that part of their what they get off on is showing us all this evil in front of us and saying, ha, 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 we're doing it in front of you, you're doing nothing. And it's almost aimed at people like you and I who are aware of what's going on. And they're laughing at us because they know that we know, but we can't do anything about it because they've got 99.999% of the masses completely under their control.
Yeah. Oh, you're exactly right. And yeah, you're talking about elements again of revelation of the method. That's precisely the you know, contained within this precept, is that not only will they let their actions be known, will they reveal it and admit to it, but then they stand behind the scenes and laugh about it. And, you know, the point you made about Alex Jones is very interesting, because why do mainstream media sources promote Alex Jones? You know, he'll be mentioned on different news outlets, or the Drudge Report will link to his website. People would say, why are they doing that? Well, the answer is that they know that a certain small percentage of the populace sees through the veil. They know the mainstream media news is cooked, that they're not going to get the truth there. So they're looking for alternate sources. Well, if they have this controlled opposition in Alex Jones, then they'll promote him to a small extent. So when people say, well, where can I go? Oh, yeah, I've heard of this guy, Alex Jones, InfoWars. Let's go there. And so what it is they're going from one corral, like sheep in a corral of the mainstream news, to going to another sheep in the corral of Alex Jones. And this is all orchestrated. They're working hand in hand. So they want to ensure that people that are truth seekers don't go to a show like yours, Andrew, or to American Free Press or to Wing TV. Instead, they want to push everybody towards Alex Jones, because they knew, no, he won't talk about the truth concerning Israel and the Jews, and on and on and on. So it's all very convenient, of course, but anyone that, you know, uses the least bit of critical thinking realizes, oh, wait, yeah, Alex Jones, mainstream media, neither one of them talk about the Jews. Huh, maybe there's a connection there.
Well, I'm pleased you brought that up, Victor, because I was quite surprised to see Alex Jones. There's a political show. It's just, well, it's called The Politics Show, and it's on BBC One, which is the main channel in the UK, every Sunday at about 11 or 12 in the morning, so 11 a.m. or midday. And Alex Jones was being interviewed on that once. And he was coming out with all his rah, 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 and then the interviewer was saying that, oh, he's insane and what have you, and they just sort of you know, move swiftly on. But they even put him on the mainstream in the UK.
I remember a couple of years ago when the Bilderberg conference was over in England, and that's when they brought Alex Jones out. That's the time when he appeared at Bilderberg with David Icke, and they put Alex Jones on. And Jones looks like this rabid dog, this wild-eyed, insane conspiracy theorist, spit flying out of his mouth, rambling like a lunatic. And everybody watching it would be like, wow, if this is what conspiracy theorists are like, we don't want anything to do with them, all this Bilderberg stuff, huh, Alex Jones. And so it's theater. It's theater is all it is. And they pay Alex Jones to say, hey, go out, discredit all conspiracy theorists by acting like a complete unhinged lunatic. And Alex, like a trained monkey, that's exactly what he does. Spit flying out of his mouth. Rah, 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 rah. And then everyone's like, oh my God, these people really are nuts. Alex Jones has done the same thing over here with, what's that guy that used to be on CNN? from England. He did the talk show. He took over from Larry King.
Piers Morgan.
Yeah. When the whole gun debate was going on over here, Piers Morgan brings on Alex Jones. And same thing. Alex Jones acts like a maniac. And he did more damage to our Second Amendment rights than any of the people that want to take our guns away from us, simply because he acted like such a crazy person that anybody watching is like, man, maybe they should take our guns away from us if this is the kind of representative that they have. So Alex Jones is an actor. He's nothing different than, you know, someone that's going on the Silence of the Lambs or any daytime soap opera. That he's a paid actor, and if they tell him to act like a lunatic and discredit everybody, then that's what Alex Jones does, because he has no core beliefs in anything. He's simply out for himself and for his masters. And what they tell him is, talk about anything, but don't ever point a finger at Israel or the Jews. And that's Alex Jones.
Well, what interested me with him was the David Duke interview that he did. And he was just getting absolutely hammered on that. And then suddenly he took a back seat and his producer came out, Rob Jacobson. And then he turns around and his producer, he was coming out with all this, you know, the usual sort of trick of trying to name the non-Jewish people involved in the conspiracy that they put as front men, but not reading out the litany of the control, like completely avoiding Rothschild family and things like that. Let's talk about people that were at Jekyll Island, but let's not necessarily talk about the people that arranged it all. Let's not talk about the banks that own the Federal Reserve. Let's talk about some of their cronies they put as front men. And it was that attitude. And then when he was trying to do that to David Duke, and Alex Jones made this comment, oh, well, Rob Jacobson's been my boss for 10 years. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, this answers a lot of questions for me. And it was almost like they were trying to set themselves up. And one thing that kind of worries me at the moment is we're getting a lot of information in mainstream media that they're actually letting things out, like, you know, to do with this big immigration push in Europe. And of course, you've had it for years in America. They're talking about it in Europe now. But the Mexicans, these, what they now want to call undocumented workers, it's gone through about three or four transitions from illegal aliens to undocumented workers. It's just laughable. And of course,
still call them illegal aliens.
Well, that's what they are. And the fact is, even if they come over there, they commit no crime and they get a job and they work flipping burgers somewhere. And then even that, they are criminals because they're not entitled to have that job. And by doing that, they're taking the advantages off from an American citizen who's got the rights as an American citizen. That's the whole point. It's the same. And so they're driving down your wages in the same way that the government and the big employers are driving down your wages by deindustrializing the nation. But what they're doing at the moment in Europe, these stories, like the sex attacks in Cologne at that station on New Year, and then that business with some immigrant raping a 10-year-old boy in a pool as a sexual emergency, and he's now in prison in solitary confinement because otherwise he'll be killed by other inmates, and this woman in Russia, this immigrant, saying Allahu Akbar after she cut off the head of a child she was babysitting. Mm-hmm. And all this is coming out of the mainstream media, and it's making me wonder I know that these people are panicking, but is this what Albert Pike talked about, the Third World War? Is this what they're now ramping up? They're saying, right, it's like a chessboard. We're getting our pieces in place. So now we've got to get the propaganda going to start the match.
Oh, I think you're right on the mark. And, you know, with these millions of Middle Easterners flooding into Europe, I mean, I feel such sympathy for the continent of Europe that they're allowing this invasion of Muslims into that country. That, yeah, when the next World War starts, you're going to have all of these people already in the country that aren't going to be fighting for white Europeans. They're not going to be fighting for them. So, it's really a dismal affair that's going on over there, and I wish one of these leaders would stand up and just say, this isn't going to happen anymore. We're getting rid of them, but so much damage has already been done. And what happened on New Year's Eve in Germany there with these poor German women being raped and molested by these Muslims is despicable. It's simply despicable. And how the German leadership, these liberals and the German police were told to cover it up and try not to let the details get out is, it's just beyond the pale, Andrew, that this is allowed to happen.
Well, it's just like a USS Liberty. I mean, it's a completely different type of event, but the people on that ship were told that if they said that Israel were it was Israelis that were bombing the ship, that they would be they would be in danger and their families would be in danger for simply telling the truth.
Yeah, you're so correct. So very correct.
So, yeah, I mean, the whole thing that we're looking at is... you know, it just seems to get progressively worse. But at the same time as it gets worse, I'm encouraged because it makes me feel that more people are waking up. And it's only going to be people waking up that's going to help, because you've been into this for over 25 years. I've been into this for about 15. And we learn more all the time, but we don't see any people seemingly rising up. But people are waking up more. So we've got about a minute or so left. So I just want to hand back to you, and just if you give any closing thoughts on what you think is the situation and looking to the future. And if you give people your contact details again, please. I think it's wingtv.net.
Correct. Well, thank you so much for having me on, Andrew. And I always look forward to these types of shows because, as I said, these are the venues where truth can be told, and your listeners should be very thankful that they have someone like you, because I've done a lot of radio shows myself, and I know how much work is involved in not only preparing for them, but also putting it online, you know, the logistics, the mechanics of it. So this is a great show you're doing. It's a great venue, and anybody that's interested in my work, they can go to www.wingtv.net. They can also look at AmericanFreePress.net. And simply, I think you summed it up best, is that there's more and more people waking up. We're aware of where we're heading to, the direction it's taking, and it's not one that benefits us. It only benefits those people in control or the minions that they have that are invading our territories and just disrupting everything. So we have to band together, you know, become aware, and it's shows like yours, Andrew, that I think are going to make the change in the world.
Well, thank you very much, Victor, and thank you very much for being on the program today. We're coming to the end of our time now, so I want to thank the listeners as well for tuning in, and I will be back with you all soon. Bye for now.